Accession number 18504, Reel 1.
Eric Hills, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Eastbourne, Sussex.
Which year was this?
1920.
So Eastbourne is your hometown, is it?
Yes.
You grew up there?
No, I grew up in various towns and villages in the country, as far north as Turvey. My father was a chauffeur and he moved from place to place and I moved with him until eventually I joined the Navy in 1940.
Were you called up or were you a volunteer?
No, it was a situation that I wanted to be in the Navy, and the only way to get in the Navy at that particular time was to sign on. And being as the war had gone wrong in our eyes with Dunkirk and what have you, it did look like a long time. So we signed on for 7 and 5, and in actual fact I wasn't far wrong, because time I got out in 1947, the war had only been really finished 18 months, so it wasn't a bad estimate.
Why were you so keen to join the Navy?
It was the business before the war where I used to work at a place at St Albans. There were a lot of fellows that was in the trenches in 1914-18 war, some horrendous story there, and they even said they wouldn't blame anybody for being a conscientious objector. And that got into my head. Plus the fact that a footballing mate of mine, his father was ex-Navy, and he was determined to get into the Navy. So that's what we did.
Was it easy to get in?
No, because we had to make the applications, and they told us the only way was to sign on. Then I don't think they were too keen at that time, because they kept us waiting for almost a year. When if you'd been under the ordinary registration, you'd have been in it a matter of months.
So during that time you were waiting, were you in any bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
Yes, I was living in London, Enfield, where we came under the London Blitz on the outskirts. They used to come over Enfield and drop their bombs to get rid of them and stuff like that. But yes, we were involved quite a lot. I worked for Bellings, the electric fire people, and we were on night shift there, but we spent so much time in the shelters that they had to abandon the night shift and go back on days.
What was your address in Enfield at that time?
Baker Street, 407 Baker Street.
And did any bombs fall near that address?
When you say near, not in the immediate proximity, but within a quarter of a mile, yes. And the daytime raid, there was machine gun bullets. I think one place in Baker Street, they're still showing, where the planes came down and just machine gunned the street.
Whereabouts in Baker Street do the bullets show still?
It's about, from Enfield Town to where I live, number 407, that's about a mile and a half, I should imagine. It was about halfway down. There used to be an old wood yard there, a sawmill sort of place, and had a little corrugated iron fence. And the bullet holes are still there. The wood place is gone, but that fence still happens to be there for some reason or other.
Were you frightened during the enemy attacks?
To say frightened, no. I don't know, it was a sort of, to us youngsters, I don't think the word frightened. I wasn't of a frightening disposition, if you know what I mean. If you jumped with a loud bang right behind me, that would make you jump, but I was not frightened as such, because the bombs were, you heard them whistling, and you used to wonder where they were going.
What kind of shelters were you using?
We had what they called the Anderson shelter in the back garden that we dug out ourselves and put it up and put an old bed and that in there. Well, old bed, that was virtually where you had to live of a night time in that period between when the Battle of London started, when they set fire to the place, from September to the November, it was every night in the shelter.
Was that 1940?
Yeah. So I eventually got the call to go to the Navy on the 11th of November.
Before we go on to the Navy, if I could ask you a bit more about the Blitz, please.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember any specific buildings or streets that were hit in the Enfield area by the bombs?
Yes, there was Southbury Road, which was where Belling's fire factory used to be. It's not there anymore. Almost opposite there, two or three houses was hit on one night. So it was in Southbury Road. A plane came down in Ponder's End in the street. And I think that one or two more in Enfield Highway, but this was, you heard the bombs drop and you wondered where that was, and then sort of the next earliest opportunity you had, you went along to see where it was. And really, it was something that became commonplace. It was a house that was there once and it wasn't anymore, and there was a great pile of rubble. Because on the Great Cambridge Road, there was another one. Bombs used to sort of drop on a house and destroy about two of them. They didn't destroy the whole street. But glass, that just disappeared in the blast.
How do you think public morale stood up to the bombing?
I don't think. Even today, looking back on it, I don't think it was too bad. It was a case of what did you do? You where could you run to? You had a job that brought you your money that you lived on. There was nowhere you could run to. But on the other hand, we did have this little fear that we were now at war, and you couldn't run away from it. Sooner or later you was going to be in the forces, or even if you didn't get into the forces, you were going to be inveigled into something like the Home Guard that was being talked about, fire watching and all this. You had to be doing it, but it's not a case of the old patriotic thing. You knew there was no choice. If you just sat on your backside, sooner or later they'd be coming up the street. They'd already done it in France. So, you know, what could we do?
Was there any hatred of the German air crews who were carrying out the bombing?
Well, yes, that had to be, because they was doing it, but I never actually came face to face with any of them, so I couldn't say. But that's how we all felt it. I mean, I got a mother and father and two sisters. It was something that was happening to us, and it was as simple as that.
Did you feel that there was any kind of special Blitz spirit?
Oh, I think so. I think that's how we were. And recent years has shown it in certain cases, like the Falklands time. You get together in those things. It's far cry from it, this business with Diana. Certain people get together and it's a different spirit.
Where did you do your basic training for the Navy?
In Portsmouth, Royal Naval Barracks, Portsmouth.
What was that like?
Could have been better, I suppose, but it was again something that it was established when you got there. The whole of the parade ground in Portsmouth Barracks was honeycombed with air raid shelters, and at the moment that the air raid sirens went, you was down the tunnels or down the air raid shelters when you were told to, no matter where you were, if you were in the bath. And that happened a few times. You took all your clothes and went down the shelter and dressed down there. A strict discipline which you abided by.
Which was the worst, the bombing in Enfield or the bombing in Portsmouth?
Well, I have to say the bombing in Portsmouth, because I was here on the night, I was there on the night of the Blitz, the 10th of January, 1941.
What was that like?
Well, that was, to me, was a nightmare. That I wonder why I'm still here. Because I was in the NAFI, or no, the YMCA, had a little hut underneath the town station. And you used to go in there for a cup of tea and a bun and see if there was anybody about that you could take out for the evening. It was a meeting place. And the sirens went around about 10 to 6, I think it was. And within half an hour, the whole place was on fire. And then people came rushing into this shelter, screaming that there's people laying in the houses, dying, and this. And that got to me, really, I suppose, what I said earlier. Not frightening me, but I couldn't stand listening to a lot of women screaming and hollering about like that. So me and another young lad, Harry Dickinson, his name was, he came from Lincolnshire. We went out on the streets and we went all through the night, from going from place to place, going into houses and getting people out. There's a place, Greetham Street. It is Greetham Street, isn't it, Ken, alongside the station there?
Yeah.
Little old houses that there was then. Somebody screaming about, there's my mother, or there was an old lady in there, so I charged up the stairs and there was an incendiary bomb burning on the mat alongside of her bed. So I pulled the, oh, she was still in the bed. I pulled all the stuff off of her bed, chucked it on this incendiary bomb, got hold of her and pulled her out, and virtually kicked her down the stairs. And as I turned around, the whole place was on fire because that, the intense heat from those incendiary bombs, it just went through the bedclothes in a matter of seconds. And that house was destroyed. Then we met two wrens who was going to find their mother down in, or a relative, down in Old Portsmouth. So we went off down there. When we got there, that place had been burnt out, and whoever they were looking for was been taken care of. We were in the Tock H building trying to put the fire out there, but there was no water, only a stirrup pump, which was no good at all in that position. And those places were burnt to the ground. The YMCA building down there. Anyway, we're finding our way back to the centre of Portsmouth. Guildhall Square, as it was then, was a massive fire, a whole of Commercial Road. And another screaming bomb down into the gutter and the Hippodrome Theatre, as it was then. That came out into the street in front of us. So one of the girls, she lived up in North End. We got up to North End eventually. And anyway, we left her and came back to the barracks. Then we spent fortnight clearing out Portsmouth. Naval training was finished for a fortnight. And we had a job of clearing up Portsmouth.
What did that involve?
Oh, well, doing just that. The bombing and, it was a complete mess, Portsmouth. And the roads had to be cleared and people had to be moved from houses to houses. And the Navy provided a labour force, that's what it amounted to. Eventually we was in the high street, in the grammar school, which still stands. Now that could have been burnt to the ground, but we saved that. We were there fire watching one night when the bombs were on the roof. And the hoses we had, there was plenty of water that time because this was later. We've put all the fires out, but the water ran down the concrete steps and flooded the basement. I say that with a bit of humour, but that's what the facts was. The Portsmouth Cathedral was saved by people in our group. Up on the roof where the dome is, they kicked the, I don't know what they'd done with them, they kicked the fire bombs off on into the, down below, I think. But it survived. And the HMS Victory. Fire bombs on there at different times. But these was our duties every other night. Till we finished our training somehow. And then we got drafted to the Manchester.
So all those incidents were in January 41?
Yeah, January, March. January to March.
How were you treated in the basic training?
Oh, fairly well. We had all these ex, or they weren't ex then, they were pensioners that had been called back into the Navy, chiefs and chief stokers. They did what they had to do. I always feel that at the time you used to moan, but they were on top of the job. They did prepare us for what was to come, that's for sure.
I think you became a stoker.
Yeah.
What did you think of the Manchester as a ship to serve in?
Well, when I first saw it at Heaven on Tyne, it was alongside of the wall, or alongside of the road, and we came off of a truck from Newcastle, and I looked up at that huge great thing. I thought it was the biggest ship I'd ever seen, because we in the Portsmouth dockyard was looking down on the ships, mostly in dry docks and that, but this looked terrific with all those guns on it, and I thought, you know, marvellous. We did have that feeling that we were invincible at that time.
This was in March 41?
Yeah.
Now, I think you were in HMS Manchester on a Malta convoy.
Yeah.
When it was severely damaged.
The Malta convoy Substance, yeah. That had started out, we were constantly on Northern Patrol, which was charging up and down the Denmark Straits and round about there, the roughest seas that I'd ever seen. But one day we came down to Scapa Flow for what we thought was a normal storing up again for another. But instead of going to the north, we came south and went to Greenock. And we loaded up with the 500 soldiers. Now, all the old crew of the Manchester said, this is another Malta convoy, but we didn't know, and neither did the soldiers. The soldiers had no idea where they were going. And we went off. 2 or 3 days later, we arrived at Gibraltar. Now, one of the amazing things to me, and always has been, there was 500 troops on board that ship, squeezed in anywhere. They were told at Gibraltar that they were not to show themselves on the upper deck. And it was July, hotter than hell, as I used to say. And I had made friends with 2 or 3 of these soldiers that was living on our mess deck, and we gave them naval uniform, overalls and an old hat to put on, so they could at least appear on the upper deck whilst we were sitting in Gibraltar. And that was, I don't quite remember now whether we got there on the Friday or the Saturday, but what I do know was that we were there a couple of nights. And we went out in the early hours of the Sunday morning to take part in the convoy, which, again, I didn't know what all that was about. My first reaction on the Monday morning in the lovely blue Mediterranean Sea, that the ships was too far spread out. I thought the convoy was, you know, they were tightly round a few ships, but it was so far out. But then, as I've said before, since then, I wasn't an admiral. This was my first business in a convoy. The other times we've just been sailing up and down roundabout. Okay, we got tangled up with the Bismarck, but we didn't see nothing, only knowing that it was somewhere around. But this business, my first impressions with the convoy was, you know, how far out they are. There was ships that even at that time I didn't really know whether it was still there. The Ark Royal, because we'd heard this business with the Lord Haw-Haw, where is the Ark Royal? But I began to believe it myself, that it had been sunk. But there it was with us. And there's an old expression that they used to use for a couple of days, it's you're on your daddy's yacht, because that's what it was like. We were sunbathing under threats that if we made ourselves sick, we would be strictly disciplined, no longer than 20 minutes at a time in the sunshine. And we adhered to it. We'd already had all the warnings about not being able to keep diaries or take photographs. Young fellows, we took notice of our initial training, so we didn't risk our bodies. And then come the Tuesday night, we were warned that we'd been spotted and we was to be expected to be attacked the next day. And we certainly were. About just after 9 o'clock, I think. We got the warning much earlier than that. And a thing that's always stayed with me ever since. It was about 8:10 on the morning of Wednesday, the 21st of July, 1941. There's a leading stoker on board the Manchester, Jimmy Butterworth. Now, I had been a pretty good footballer back home, and when I got aboard the Manchester, we were into the ship's football team pretty smartly, and I met my friend Ken Smith. And Jimmy Butterworth shouted across the mess deck to a stoker, Stevens, "I'll write to you, Mrs. Stevo." And this other fellow, Stevens, he shouted back at Jimmy, "You mind I don't have to write into your bugger?" They were his exact words. And that stuck in my mind since this day, because we never saw Jimmy Butterworth again. He was scraped off the bulkheads. And I'll never forget that moment. So 8 o'clock, we go down into the boiler room. And about 8:45, the gun started firing, first off. And I think it must have been about 9:10, around about that time. When all the thuds and banging we could hear from the gun suddenly were taken over by the biggest clatter that I've ever heard in my life up to that time. And that was a torpedo hitting the ship. Surprisingly, I remained calm, as did my friend Dickie Moon, and we did all that we had to do. We stayed on watch until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We were supposed to have been relieved at midday, but we stayed there till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, when we were eventually relieved, because they had to clear all the casualties away and try and right the ship. The actual torpedoing, within minutes of it happening, I thought the front of the boiler was going to come out because it started vibrating. We were pumping water in there as well as oil. The torpedo had severed the oil fuel pipes, and we were getting water in there, so there had to be a quick change round to different fuel tanks. And we got it right in the end. There was a 45 degree list. I've been on the HMS Belfast up in London a few times. That was almost the same as that. I think we had a list of about 45 degrees. It seems like you could stand with your foot on the ship's side and be level. But eventually it eased off a bit. We were relieved and came back upstairs, or up on the top deck, to see utter chaos out there. They were still rescuing people from down the after end. Everything that could be moved was brought from one side of the ship to the other. But during that time, while we were still down below, they had given us the message that we were to endeavour to return to Jib, and if we could keep the ship going, we might have a chance. So I did not get in a panic or lose my nerve. Neither did any of us down there, I don't think. And when we came up and saw what had happened, it was a case of getting us, can we get back to Jib? Because I didn't think we would. We were attacked again in the afternoon, or they thought that we were. I didn't see them, but they said that there was enemy planes on the horizon, and they fired the forward 6-inch guns at them. I've learned since that they use special shells, but I didn't know anything about that sort of thing in those days. And nobody came near us. And that was Wednesday morning when all that happened. And Thursday seemed to be okay. And we did have a destroyer with us, the Avon Vale, escorting us back. And what you said about hatred to the Germans earlier on, when they, on this Thursday, the Avon Vale came alongside, it had a man on, or somebody on board that had got appendicitis. And they wanted to, the surgeon doctor to have a look at him. So despite all the casualties that we had on board in the sick bay, they brought him aboard. But whilst that ship was alongside, there was three Italian Air Force people standing on the upper deck who had been rescued from this. I don't know whether it was the plane that shot us down, but or hit us, but that a plane was shot down quite close to the Manchester. And apparently these guys was rescued and they were on the Avon Vale. Now they did get some hostility from us. Bring those bastards aboard here and we'll show you. But like everything else, they kept them well out of the way. And really, I was not too happy because they just laughed at us. I mean, they could be easily seen. Anyway, that was by Friday, Gibraltar becomes into sight in the evening. And ships came out from Gib to escort us. And thankfully we got back into the, I called it the safety of the dry dock in Gibraltar. And to me, Gibraltar has forevermore been Shangri-La. In recent years I've made two trips out there on a basis of reminiscing, if you like. But looking at Gibraltar then and now, I've made a fair old video of it all. And funnily enough, I've made a couple of friends out there on this basis. What was happening in Gibraltar while we were there? Explosions every few minutes. They were blasting the inside of the rock out. I have found out only last year that they were doing this because they were honestly believing that the Germans was about to invade the rock from Spain. And that Franco would have given his permission, providing that we that he had already invaded here, German.
Which was the worst experience for you? Was it the attack on the Manchester on the 21st of July 1941 or the 10th of January Blitz in Portsmouth?
For me personally, the Blitz on Portsmouth, because that was horrendous. We only kept charging about. I use those words, charging. We only kept charging about because we didn't know what to do. That bombs was dropping everywhere. There was no water. Everything was on fire. But on the torpedo wing of the Manchester, apart from the noise of the guns and the terrific bang, I personally didn't know what was happening. It wasn't until we got up top to see. I had always had a terror that my action station on the Manchester, when not down in the boiler room, would have been in the very after shell magazine. That would have terrified me, and the terrifying thought of having to go down there even in an action. And they were the first people that I wanted to know about once I did get back on the upper deck. How are they? But they were let out. They